This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's talk about another fine case. Brian Koberger pled guilty to four counts of first-degree murder in the Idaho student killings. He stood in court, told the judge he was guilty, signed a nine-page questionnaire confirming no one forced him, took four life sentences to avoid the death penalty. 13 months later, he filed a handwritten petition claiming his own lawyers scared him into a false confession. Gosh. Don't want to scare Brian. Defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis is with us to help us understand Koberger's new claims, his demand for a new trial that he's welcoming, and where this goes, if anywhere. But before we really jump into this, I want to talk about this new board game I see that's coming out. I'm really excited about this. This could be fun for the whole family. And it really, it helps you understand the case more. It helps you understand the law more. And I think it really helps us get to see what's going on in the world of Brian Koberger from behind bars. It's called Brian's Board, the board game. I'd like you to let's take a look before we jump into more discussion of what's going on with the case.
Are you stuck in a tiny concrete box with nothing to do and absolutely no one who believes you? Sounds like you need Brian's Board. The board game, where every spin is a new adventure in maximum security fun. Spin the wheel and see what happens. Land on Call the New York Times. Pick up that phone and explain your innocence in 47 single-spaced pages. Nobody asked, but here we go. Draw an action card. Politely ask Rufus in cell block 3H to stop urinating in your coffee. Good luck with that one. Tell the mean podcaster to stop making jokes about broomsticks and your orifices. He won't. Read a thesaurus and learn more big words for your next manifesto. Egregious, mendacious, exculpatory. You'll sound almost as smart as you think you are. Watch out for the drop the soap card. If you collect three, you're out of the game. And the other players? They'll have to identify your remains through dental records alone. Oh, and Steve already called dibs on the teeth. He's making a necklace. Brian's board comes with a spinning wheel, over 50 action cards, four tiny orange jumpsuits, a miniature cell block game board, and one very small plastic soap. Plea deal not included. Appeals sold separately. Brian's Board. Fun for the whole cell block.
So happy that, you know, he's doing something. He's doing something behind bars.
I've got a nephew who's got a birthday coming up.
Hey, holidays aren't far off either. You know, this could be one for everybody.
Right.
Brian Koberger, he stood up in front of that judge. He signed a nine-page questionnaire. Are you entering this plea freely and voluntarily? Yes. Are you admitting to all the elements of the crime? Yes. Do you understand you may not be able to withdraw this plea later? Yes. The judge looked at him and asked directly, are you pleading guilty because you're guilty? Yes. That's layers of prosecution designed to prevent exactly what he is trying to do now. Why does he think none of that matters?
You know, I wonder if when you get in that jailhouse law library or you get access to legal books, your mind, your imagination can really wander and you can start to dream and you could say, hey, this case has one passing similarity to mine. This must be applicable. Oh, I've been wronged. I'm going to actually get out of here. This is, and then you forget about like the reality, the transcript from that plea hearing, the witnesses, the judge, all of that. You know, that's what's going to hold substantial weight, in a courtroom and not, you know, sort of your dreams while you're sitting in that cell.
It's when you saw the handwritten letter that he sent and that he also typed to the New York Times, and then he sent the one to the court. Now he has a new attorney assigned to him. It wasn't filed by an attorney. It was filed by him after spending time in the law library and writing more notes like a serial killer does. What was your reaction when you saw that? Were you surprised at all that Koberger is trying to pull this? Were you surprised that there's no actual attorney behind that letter? Because no attorney may actually... Would an attorney get behind him signing any of this that's not legally assigned to him by law to be a new representative? What was your take on all of that?
Yeah, you know, it's telling in part that it was not signed off on by an attorney, because an attorney is ethically prohibited from making any kind of argument that completely lacks merit, that is not supported by law or fact. And I just wonder if he was asking around and the attorneys were like, bro, like we cannot represent that those things are true. And then he's like, oh, that's okay. I can. I don't have a law license to get revoked, so I'll do it. You have these, I've seen a ton of handwritten stuff like that when I've worked for judges.
Yeah.
And so much of it is devoid of any kind of substance or legal or factual import.
If it wasn't Koberger, we probably wouldn't be talking about it. I mean, how common is this, Eric, that inmates do stunts like this and think that they're going to get somewhere in their infinite boredom behind bars and somehow think, maybe I got a chance here?
Tony, I did what's called a judicial clerkship after law school. It's where you're essentially like a legal advisor to a judge and helping them with stuff. And we would get so many of these letters. And a lot of them, some of them would be very similar in structure and in content, almost as if they sort of got together and they're like, hey, say this. Hey, write this down. Just because, you know, they've got a ton of time in there and they're trying their best to advocate for themselves. But this is way more common than you think. We see these all the time in the judicial system.
Koberger's petition says his lawyers told him and his family, parents, sisters, all in the room, an elaborate story about touring an 8x8 death row cell to scare him into taking the deal. He's using this as an argument that they tried to scare him and his family. He says they told him actual guilt wasn't an important factor. He says he was advised to lie. But every defense attorney in a capital case has the conversation about what execution actually looks like. That's not coercion. That's part of the job. Isn't that just a defense attorney doing their job and Koberger is trying to twist it into something that it's not?
By and large, absolutely. You completely have to convey the reality of the potential consequences to your client. Now, you can never advise them to lie. And if that happened, that's extremely problematic. I haven't heard of any actual evidence of that. But that being said, you got to have a come to Jesus talk sometimes, bro. Like they don't always want to realize, hey, if you don't go down the legally advisable road, it's going to be a gajillion times worse, man. And you don't know this, and I do. And you know, it's their decision ultimately, and you can't engage in undue pressure, but you can impress your point upon them. In fact, I think it's your duty as their counselor.
What would Koberger have to prove to say that any of these points he's trying to make are actually legitimate, other than just this is how it made me feel?
Yeah, you know, he would have to prove a few things. In this context of trying to withdraw a guilty plea, he usually has to prove that his attorneys were constitutionally ineffective, so that their representation fell below an objective standard of reasonableness, like they were grossly negligent, and that had they not have been so, he would have actually gone to trial in this quadruple homicide death penalty case. So there are a lot to prove. And on that first prong, he's got to show, like, if he can show that they lied or that they told him to lie, that might get there. I don't know how in the world he's going to prove that. If he showed that they misled him in some fashion about the law, then that could be getting closer. But I think it's a really high bar, and judges hate to see these motions because they want the finality in the case.
Obviously, there was mountains of evidence against Brian Koberger, his DNA on the knife sheath, his vehicle location data repeatedly, a pattern of all that, his location. I mean, the list goes on and on and on and on. It, buying the knife, buying, you know, going back online, trying to buy another knife, disassembling his car. It's a huge list of shit. It's not just like one thing over here. And gee, if there's another piece that competes with that, it kind of makes it an even playing field. It's not. But he's treating it like that. And the big argument that is trying to be made, it was made in that broken plea book, not even citing the actual evidence reports, but actually rephrasing things. Hair recovered near Ethan Chapin's hand that the FBI tested and determined was not Koberger. It was described as debris in the actual report itself. He says his lawyers never told him about it, but his own defense expert already examined that hair and concluded it was consistent with Chapin's own hair. And the phrase he uses in the petition, clumps of hair, doesn't appear in any court filing or FBI report. It comes from the book written by someone who says he never spoke to Koberger. Does that help him, or is Koberger borrowing someone else's argument because he doesn't really have one and thought, well, this guy's making a good one for me. A bunch of people out here seem to think it's good because I keep getting these letters from people on the outside. Maybe I should do something with this.
Yeah, you know, constitutionally inadequate investigation can be a part of a meritorious claim to withdraw a guilty plea. But here what it looks like is defense did adequately investigate that. They had their own expert look at it who determined it was a hair consistent with that of the alleged victim, or not alleged anymore, victim. So, you know, I don't think he's going to get much traction there. I imagine his defense counsel made available all the discovery to him. Now, I imagine it's probably, you know, tens of thousands of pages or more, and all of these materials and photos and everything else. And so I don't know that his counsel actually didn't make that available to him. You don't have to sit down and talk through every, you know, 10,000 page discovery packet with the client.
Yeah, and Brian Koberger just saying something aloud doesn't make it fact either or true. Lehigh County Prosecutor Bill Thompson, he's the one who cut the deal over the objections of the Gonzalez family. They wanted a trial. They wanted the death penalty. They called the state of Idaho. They called the state of Idaho and said, "You have failed us." Thompson's argument was that the deal spared the families decades of appeals and guaranteed Koberger would die in prison, that they wouldn't have to deal with him trying to file appeal after appeal or this or that. Obviously, he's filed something and we're talking about him right now. I mean, you can't stop Brian Koberger from speaking aloud. At the end of the day, though, did Thompson fail the families by not knowing that this was a possibility, or did he know that this was a possibility? Not that it will necessarily lead anywhere, but so far it's gotten him a new attorney. So, I mean, that's something, not exactly the spare the families pitch that they were promised.
You know, I certainly understand folks who will say, this is the most grave crime we can imagine four times over. So we should seek the gravest consequence the legal system provides, which is the death penalty. I can, of course, see that families, the victim's family, very understandable if that's where they might be. That being said, no, I think that this outcome was the best under the circumstances. You don't know what's going to happen at a jury trial, certainly at a death penalty phase. You look at the Aurora Theater shooting defendant who killed more than James Holmes, killed more than 10 people in my home state of Colorado. Even he didn't get the death penalty. There is no slam dunk in a death penalty case. And to sort of say, hey, we're going to pin this guy on four convictions, he's admitting to what he did, he'll be in prison for the rest of his life, most likely, I think that that is the most reasonable course of action.
Is something like this, I mean, at the end of the day, if you're the prosecutor, you're talking about making deals, you're advising the family, the family's giving you their feedback. I mean, the prosecutor's going to do what they're going to do. Is this just kind of one of those things where it's like, yeah, I mean, he can't do this or that, traditionally, but you know, you can't stop him from writing a letter to the New York Times or calling them or writing a letter to a judge. Anyone has the possibility to do that. People are going to hear about that, but it doesn't mean it's going to go anywhere. Is there anything that can be said to the family at this point to say or assure them there's no way Brian Koberger is going to go back to trial if that's not what they want to have happen at this point? Or is there, I mean, in your experience here, I guess, percentage-wise, what's the chance that Brian Koberger actually gets a trial because he now says he wants one?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, if I'm the prosecutor, part of that job, part of any legal decision is assessing probabilities. It's trying to forecast, hey, what are the possible consequences? Which one is more likely? Which one is worse? How do I navigate the best possible resolution? I would go to the family as a prosecutor and I would say, hey, look, you look at the probability on this. It is extraordinarily unlikely that he's going to prevail on some sort of pro se motion to withdraw his guilty plea under these circumstances, you know, that this was still the best course of action. I think it's so exceedingly unlikely that he's going to get a new trial on these grounds as we understand them so far.
It'll be fascinating to watch. I just hate expelling more oxygen on Brian Koberger. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.